Atheist Nomads, episode 193, The Enemy of My Enemy.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
The reason why Lauren's not with us is because she's feeling a bit fatigued. She's pregnant.
Hey. Oh, Big Papa.
I'm going to be a dad.
Oh, that's kind of funny. Yeah. Kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like at this point, 5 weeks along, she had an appointment with OB-GYN to like the pre-getting pregnant. What can I do or not do to help this process along? And they went through all of that, and then the doctor did the exam, and it was like, we should probably do a pregnancy test. And it was positive.
Right.
What's really funny is the night before, I was thinking, I bet she's pregnant.
Really? A little bit of prognostication?
Just enough symptoms that she'd mentioned that I was starting to think, well, like one of them, fatigue. I was starting to think that that wasn't just the... lingering fatigue from her recent little bout of illness.
Yeah.
That doesn't last that long. It just seemed like every night at 8 o'clock, she wants to, you know, she's about ready to go to bed.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys aren't that old. You don't go to bed that early usually, right?
No.
Okay.
No, but when she was sick, she was doing that. And then it just kind of continued and it was like, huh, what's going on here?
Hooray.
Yeah. Oh,
there's a little Dustin and Lauren in the oven. Oh boy.
Yep. At this time, about the size of a sunflower seed.
Sorry, but
yeah. The cluster of cells are now arranged kind of like a tadpole, with a partial nerve cord forming.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah, man, I'm glad it's you and not me. Oh no, serious, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very happy because you're happy. Oh boy. And the spirit of deliveries, my Bears versus Babies Kickstarter game will be getting here in probably about a month or so. Can't wait.
Nice. Yeah, you're getting that very soon, and I'll have to be waiting until December for mine.
Yeah. Oh boy. Gonna have a December baby?
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. I really hope there's at least 3 weeks between your baby's birthday and Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be nice.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
If your baby is like anywhere around like December 20th to the 1st, like just shove your hand up there and just keep it in. Like, let it be born yet.
That's not how it works.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it works. Don't come out yet.
No, the likely time period would be from about Thanksgiving to Pearl Harbor Day.
Okay, well, Thanksgiving would be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the worst thing for a kid to grow up with is like happy birthday, Merry Christmas presents.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My mom dealt with that. Her birthdays. Well, your mom would have too, with their birthdays being January 5.
Yeah. Closer. Yeah. Not as much, but yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. There were a couple. I've heard of a couple cheap relatives that would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. Cheap bastards don't.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We are now on iHeartRadio.
Oh boy. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
we're on iHeartRadio. See? Got another old boy.
They started doing podcasts a few months back, and I submitted us about a month ago and got the approval notice today.
Sweet. Is it kind of like iTunes where they just like have a link and leech our stuff directly from
From the RSS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll still be able to get like good download numbers and stuff from them. Sweet.
And Libsyn actually has worked very closely with iHeartRadio on getting all this set up.
Huh.
So they actually have their own iHeartRadio destination
script.
Oh. So it's got its own RSS feed that is just for iHeartRadio, and all the stats will flow right back. Unlike Google Play, which we don't get numbers back on downloads.
Well, they actually download the show, right?
Yeah.
One time, and then it could be downloaded 20,000 times. We'd never fucking know.
Uh-huh. Because the stats in Google Play on the podcaster side are absolute shit.
Oh, yay.
I mean, they are... Occasionally, there might be data, and sometimes there's not, and there's no way of knowing. Did anybody listen, or did they just not record any data? It's so sketchy. And they haven't worked out how to report the stats back to Libsyn.
You heard it here first, folks. We're fucking number one on Google Play. 250,000 downloads a month average. Google
Play. The last time I checked the stats there, the only people they were trying to reliably give accurate numbers to were like the top 1% of shows.
Yeah. Which we are a part of. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh boy, oh goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, and as another reminder, live recording of episode 200 coming up on May 20.
Hooray.
And let's go ahead and move on to dusting off the degree. And this time I am still procrastinating on moving on to Jehovah's Witness Apocalypse, but it's not just procrastinating. There are other things that I want to talk about. And this one I wanted to talk about with a story last week and then forgot. So I actually put it in the notes to talk about it. And I am calling it The Enemy of My Enemy, or Love the Believer, Not the Belief. Going for like a Doctor Strangelove type double title.
Yeah, totally.
Doctor Strangelove or...
Fucking amazing.
How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
That's right. Glorious movie.
So one thing I've definitely noticed, and like this came up in when we were over with my family on for Christmas, the Berlin truck attack came up, and Lauren said, "Oh, I hope it's not a Muslim." Well, of course it was going to be a Muslim. That is that statistically, those are the ones who are doing most of the attacking. The reason why she had that sentiment and I shared it was because of Germany was getting so much attention for all of the refugees they were taking in. And there was all of this anti-Muslim hate coming from the right, especially about taking in refugees, that, oh, you're just going to be bringing in terrorists. You know, what if that one Skittle has arsenic type thing? And it's kind of got me thinking in the last couple of weeks of, are we in general being too reactionary against the right and becoming overly apologetic of Muslims?
We as a show?
Yeah.
There is a point where, you know, there are like many hundreds of millions, billions of Muslims out there. And the vast, vast majority of them are, you know, normal, peaceful, nice people. I would like to think that I separate the nice people, be them Muslims, be them Christians, be them fucking Jains, the assholes, away from the rest of them a bit. And like, when I say Christians are assholes, I'm not saying all of them. And I'm not going to say that all Muslims are bad. So I don't think that we lump them in as a entire group and say they're all bad. So I don't think that we're doing that. I'm kind of rambling, but
yeah. Well, like, I wouldn't say there's been any specific case where we have been
die.
We haven't done any die, and we also haven't had any case where we've gone too soft on, oh no, they're peaceful. No, there's a lot of terrorists. Yeah, there's a lot of peaceful people, but there are also a lot of terrorists. But it's really easy here in the U.S. to look at it as they are right now. Muslims in America are almost without exception peaceful. You are far more likely in the U.S. to be a victim of white Christian right-wing terrorism than Islamic terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
And the rhetoric coming from the right is not only inhumane, but it's dangerous. And I'm not just talking about they are going to incite violence against us with their rhetoric. I'm talking, if you say we will not take refugees from countries with the most violence and terrorism, then why the fuck are we taking in refugees at all? Because the only reason to take in a goddamn refugee is if they're escaping violence, persecution, and terror. You don't take refugees from happy, peaceful countries.
To me, you can't be a refugee unless you're like being hurt or killed, or you know, something bad is happening to you. If your life is peachy and rosy, then you know you just want to become a citizen. Fine, but you're not a refugee. You're just
an immigrant
trying to immigrate.
Yeah, you're not seeking asylum. You know, you can't seek asylum in the U.S. from Sweden or Germany. Your life is just fine. You can
basically
get, you have good reason to try to seek asylum in the U.S. if you're in fucking South Sudan or Syria, because people are actively trying to kill you. And the thing that is the most mind-boggling about it is these are people who are escaping the terrorists.
Who are, in a lot of cases, Muslim themselves.
Right. But they
unless you're in like South Central Africa, then they're fucking, you know, Christians too that are being terrorists.
They are literally fleeing the terrorists that the right wing are afraid of. They are forgetting that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. These refugees are enemies of the terrorists. They want a better life in a safer, more tolerant place. And when you look at the stats, they don't commit crimes at anywhere near the rate of native-born citizens.
Yeah.
They tend to do they try their hardest to assimilate into the culture, while often not wanting to completely lose their home culture, but they tend to do a pretty damn good job of assimilating, at least as much as we could reasonably ask. And so it really gets me angry. And here in America, it is really easy to look at them and be like, oh yeah, the Muslims here, the Muslims are people fleeing Islamic terrorism. They are happy, peaceful, wonderful people, because that's who comes here. That's who we let in as refugees.
After so much extreme vetting, I mean,
they are
fine-tooth combed for generally years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you have some serious special skill sets, you're not getting into the U.S. within like a couple years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And by really good skill sets, like you're a doctor, an engineer.
Doctors, engineers.
Or a computer programmer.
Yeah, if you're a fucking rocket scientist, they'll probably fucking love you, but just saying.
Especially if you're an Iranian rocket scientist.
Ooh, or a North Korean rocket scientist. They'll probably put you up on a pedestal for,
anyways. But that's defection, not asylum. That's a little different. But it's like when you look at Europe, and it's been interesting. I've been kind of shaking up some of my sources a bit that I'm looking at for these news stories. And been getting a little different cross-section of world news. And I'm seeing more stories from Europe where their experience there with Muslims is a lot different. It's not so much refugees as immigrants. And immigrants aren't necessarily fleeing a horrible, oppressive place. And in Europe, you also have quite a few. You have a lot more travel back and forth between Europe and North Africa, especially, and a lot more opportunities for radicalization.
Hmm.
It's something that is happening there. And we are Americans, and like many Americans, we tend to be very America-centric. And if that's not what's happening in America, then it's not happening. But no, there are a lot of Muslims getting radicalized. We may not see them here, but they aren't out there.
Hmm.
And just because somebody is the enemy of my enemy, that doesn't make them our friend.
Sure.
They may make a interesting temporary ally, such as the U.S. and the Soviet Union during World War II. That didn't last very long.
No, but I think that was Johnson's fault. Not Johnson. Truman? Yeah, the little guy with the glasses. Yeah, Truman. No, it was just
bound to happen. Like, they made very intentional efforts to make sure that you had the U.S. and British on one side and the Soviets on the other side, and the two should never meet. And they never did meet until each theater was closed. Because everybody knew that when they meet, World War III is starting.
I have issues with Truman. But, we'll leave that aside.
Okay. Hey, to be fair, though, at least Truman kept MacArthur from getting anywhere from 9 to 40 bombs that he wanted. And he didn't just want to have them available for him in Japan. No, no, no. He wanted to use them on China. Mm. And Truman said, oh, hell no. You're not turning northern China into a sea of glass. Yeah. Anyway, let's go ahead and take a break, and then we will move on to news.
Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
Still think this world would be a lot different place if Wallace had gotten in there versus Truman.
Hmm.
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Okay.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Sorry. Russia.
Yes. Moscow gets hit with terrorist attacks pretty frequently. St. Petersburg, not so much, until this week when a suicide bomber hit a subway, killing 14 people.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks like he had rented out an apartment in St. Petersburg just a month before and had been in Russia for at least a few months and came from Kyrgyzstan. A majority Muslim ex-Soviet republic in Central Asia.
Right, so no bad blood there.
Yeah, quite a bit of bad blood, actually.
Yeah, that was...
Sarcasm, yeah.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, yeah. it hasn't been proven yet if he was motivated by militant Islamist ideology, but Kyrgyzstan is an independent country now. They aren't fighting for their independence. If he was a Chechen, I would suspect it was more nationalism and freedom fighting than just a terrorist strike. But in this case, yeah, there's a decent chance that there was some definite religiously motivated reason for this attack.
Yeah, I kind of wouldn't doubt that, seriously. I don't know. Everything just feels weird about Putin right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I could be totally conspiracy theory, or I could just, you know, totally see the way the story happened. But, you know, I don't know. This is all just a weird time right now.
Well, as this Reuters article points out, if it is proven that he does have a militant, that it was a militant Islamist that did this, then it will call into question Putin's claim that their intervention in Syria is making them safer, keeping the terrorists away, which is a claim that sounds very familiar, like something Bush said. Take the fight to the terrorists so they don't come here.
Yeah, that worked really well.
Yeah. The thing with terrorists is they go wherever the hell they go.
Well, you know, it's it's easy to stop 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to stop one or two.
Yeah. Yeah. One person who is not planning on ever going home is far more dangerous than an army.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you're in favor of this wall, you know, it ain't gonna do shit.
Oh, the wall. Yeah, walls work to stop armies, not terrorists or drug smugglers.
And if you watch that horrible movie with with dragons in China that just came out recently, I will think less of you if you watch it.
Just out there. I haven't seen it.
Oh, good. Okay. Anyways, yeah, goodness. I think that Putin and Trump more so are just full of hot air, and there's not much that they're saying that's really gonna, you know, have an effect one way or the other. I mean, Putin's probably pissing some people off down in Syria, so we'll just see how that works out for him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. But apparently he's got a fan here in America.
Oh yeah. Oh goodness, yes. Such a big fan. Pat Buchanan is definitely a fanboy, let's say, of Putin. Putin is making Russia great again. That's right. In his own words, Pat Buchanan thinks Putin is the preeminent statesman of our time.
Wait,
thinks more of him than Trump, even.
Wow. Yeah.
A God and country Russian patriot who stands for Christianity and stands against the Western progressivism vision of what mankind's future ought to be. So, yeah, he goes on saying, and in defying the Americans, he speaks for those millions of Europeans who wish to restore their national identities and recapture their lost sovereignty from the supranational, I still can't say that, European Union. Putin also stands against the progressive moral relativism of a Western elite that has cut its Christian roots to embrace secularism and hedonism. It gets worse, even.
Ugh, really?
Yeah, a little bit worse. Yeah, yeah. Because he goes off the deep side just so quick. The new dividing lines are between social conservatism and self-indulgent secularism, between tribalism and transnationalism, between the nation-state and the new world order. Holy fuck.
Oh, wow.
It's just wow. So so the way I see it, and this is me talking and not Pat, Putin was a KGB foreign intelligence officer for 16 years, mm-hmm. rising to the rank of lieutenant colonel before retiring in 1991 to enter politics. Putin knows where a lot of the bodies are buried, and he probably put quite a few of them there himself.
Yeah. Both before and after entering politics.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's no innocent since he's been in politics.
You run he's against jailed Putin, or killed. You die. Huh? You run against Putin, you die.
Pretty much, yeah. He's jailed or killed many, many people and oppressed the ones that are just poor. And just like Trump, Putin has helped him and his friends get even richer. So if that son of a prick Pat Buchanan looks up to Putin, then there simply is no redeeming a person like Pat. Wow. So yeah, that was my rant for the week.
Man, yeah. And okay, when you look at it, it's beginning to all make sense.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Because you had late 80s, you had the rise of in the 80s, you had the rise of the conservative movement. And they viewed that as what destroyed the Soviet Union. No, the Soviet Union was falling apart on its own.
I do think that the overspending that Reagan did, that, you know, Russian tried to keep up with, did help a little bit. But
oh, that did. Yeah, yes,
they were a failing country, anyways.
That was a little bit of gas being thrown on the fire, but the fire was already burning.
Yeah.
And so they viewed themselves as having defeated the Soviet Union, the godless atheist Soviet Union. And now that Putin has reinstated the Russian Orthodox Church and is fighting them goddamn queers, and then you've got this new atheist movement here in America, their whole world is turned upside down.
Yeah, it's all topsy-turvy.
So it would make sense that the ones who are able to do what they want to do would be the ones they like. Even though that is a... Or actually, probably more accurately, because it is a conservative Christian dictator.
Yeah,
that's what like they Trump. Want. That's why they voted for Trump.
Well, like Trump, Putin is just he goes where the money is, where mm-hmm. he thinks he can get the votes. So I don't think either are really Christian. I just think they're just using that as a good way to get, you know, people on their side.
Oh yeah, yeah. Putin's just using it because when the church was no longer being actively oppressed, a lot of people went back to church. A lot of Russians didn't stop being Christian, so he went ahead and just made that official. Restored the Russian Orthodox Church as yet another way of helping control the people. And if you look at, like, right now, Vladimir Putin is most likely the single richest person in the world. He has funneled so much money into his own bank account. It is ridiculous. Like, he's given monopolies to corporations where he is the primary shareholder, or at least one of the major shareholders. He did that with the whole oil industry. Basically got it all merged into one, and the government is one of the major owners. Vladimir Putin is one of the major owners. He did the same thing with their news media. The government and Vladimir Putin own most of their media now.
God damn. Well, yeah, like I said, if you're friends with Putin, you're making out. If you're not, you're probably going to end up in a very bad situation, if not dead.
Yeah. Oh, God damn. All right. Well, sticking with Europe, let's go ahead and look at one of the nice, wonderful, liberal havens of Europe.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. 10 years ago, a Jewish community center opened up in the northern Swedish town of Umeå. In recent years, they have been increasingly targeted with swastikas and messages like, "We know where you live."
Not creepy at all.
In one case, a car was vandalized, and this is the same town that had a march 2 years ago to mark the anniversary of Kristallnacht, the start of Nazi Germany's violence against Jews.
Yeah.
And attendance at the community center has been dwindling out of concerns for safety, and now it is closing.
Well, what are you going to do?
Nazis don't like Jews.
Yeah, they are kind of cats and dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. When something that was kind of creepy was, you know, a few years ago, and my musical taste has a tendency to start getting way too specific until I get really bored and then I just stop listening to music. And that happened to me a few years ago when I started getting into a lot more European metal, a lot of black metal and power metal in particular. A lot of that is coming out of Northern and Eastern Europe, and a lot of the Northern European stuff, it was creepy how much of it was pretty Nazi.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Like, there are quite a few bands that I went ahead and gave a thumbs down on Pandora because that was just straight up white supremacist bullshit.
Huh.
When you could understand the lyrics, it was obviously, yeah, oh man, creepy. Creepy.
Did not really know that, but then again, metal's never been my thing.
Yeah, the whole skinhead and metal thing, yeah, that's a thing.
So
that's what's happening to Jews in northern Sweden. What's really wonderful is in southern Sweden, it's not much better. It's just instead of Nazis. Well, heck, I'll go ahead and go with the words of Isaac Reichel, Secretary General of Sweden's Central Council of Jewish Communities.
Okay.
We've had problems with neo-Nazis in Gothenburg and Umeå, but in other cities like Stockholm, we feel safer. But he also talked about how in southern Sweden, the city of Malmö, the threat was mostly from an Islamist group.
I remember we talked about Kristallnacht a few episodes ago. That, trashing places, burning places down.
Yeah.
Dragging Jews out of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good thing.
No, no. And I think we might have even talked about that march a couple years ago.
I do believe.
Oh, man.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. All right. So we got Jews getting shit on.
Mm.
Well, a new bill before the Knesset, Israel's parliament, would deduct the value of stipends and other benefits that Ramallah pays to the families of Palestinian martyrs from the tax revenue payments that Israel collects on behalf of the Palestinian Authority.
Huh.
Roughly a billion shekels.
That sounds like a lot.
That's about a quarter of $1 billion.
Okay.
That's not as much, but that's still a huge chunk of the Palestinian Authority's budget.
Huh. Well, there you go. Starve them.
Yep.
And I'm sure that Palestinians, they just won't mind. They'll just roll over. So, yeah, let's just find a way to piss off the Palestinians even more. Shrink their country. The little bit of land that Israel is deemed to give them.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, let's just shit on them and see what happens. And then, when they attack, then we'll, be justified in, fucking decimating everybody. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and what really sucks is, so Israeli Jews will get attacked, but Islamists in Europe will find European Jews to take it out on. And that's just great.
Well, then people wonder why, these people over here are getting attacked. And then, it's all these evil people, and all these evil Muslims. And, if we have any Muslim extremists, if there's somebody you're pissed at, attack those people, not like somebody else in some distant place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as what the Israelis are doing, if they actually do go through with this, they're punishing these people's families.
Mm.
They're not punishing the martyrs because they're dead. They're punishing the families of these martyrs, which will piss them off. And some of those kids will grow up to be martyrs.
Oh, sure.
Guaranteed. And,
oh, yeah. Kind of the way shit goes. Fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, they could just go full biblical on them and, kill the parents, you kill the kids, you kill the animals, just wipe the city off the face of the earth. Isn't that fucking biblical?
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. Kind
of
gross.
And the right wing parties in Israel do kind of seem to want to do that.
Mm. God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do we have like two major religions fighting over one tiny little strip of land?
Well, it's more than just one tiny little strip of land. You've got three major religions competing over one rock.
Yeah. I mean, in the scheme of things, Jews, not that very numerous, but they have a lot of powerful friends.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
All right, let's go ahead and take another break. And then
I'm just going to put this out there. Just give everybody 24 hours to evacuate, then just fucking nuke the entire area. Just get it over with. Then nobody can have it.
Oh, that was actually my plan that I came up with in Jerusalem.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
When I was in the old city, it was, all right, yeah, you build a big wall around Jerusalem, kick everyone out, and set off a nuke right in the middle of Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Yeah.
Since that's Temple Mount, that's what everybody wants.
Yep.
Completely just vaporize it.
Yeah, I'm fine with this.
Now, my plan was actually a little more detailed than that. It actually started with you take that rock from the middle of the dome, and since that's supposed to be the altar for, or where the altar goes for the Jews, and then you've got some Christians who are really hoping the Jews can sacrifice a red heifer on that, and you've got Muslims where that's where Muhammad went to heaven. Well, you just take that rock and you take it out to the Pacific Ocean and drop it into the Mariana Trench. Where nobody will even be able to find it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's my plan. Oh, and if anybody tries to scale the wall to get into the old, or into Jerusalem after it's been nuked, they get shot on sight.
Well, I mean, nobody's going to go in there for at least a couple hundred years.
Even if they try.
Okay.
Shot on sight.
Sure.
Completely off limits.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
I've softened my view on it a little bit since then, but yeah, it still has an appeal.
I mean, if we turn the entire place into a glass sculpture, then, you know, there won't be shit to really take away from there anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one part I would find sad.
I'm surprisingly fine with this.
The one part I'd find sad about it is there are some really awesome, like, 2,500-year-old olive trees at the bottom of the Mount of Olives that, those would be a shame to lose.
You know what? There's other olives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There are other olive trees
I wouldn't even want to, like, dig them up and transplant them. Nope. There's other olive trees.
They get to become glass, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Every fucking bit of it.
And in case any of you think we're just wanting to murder a bunch of people with this, no. They all have to evacuate.
I say give everybody 24 hours. Get the fuck out.
Oh, yeah. I'd even give them a week.
Yeah. That's mighty gracious of you.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and take another break, and then, we've got a few crazy people saying crazy things. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. And we're not the crazy people, just to make sure that's clear. The first one is Pat Robertson.
You figure lesbians, 1% of the population, homosexuals, 2% of the population. That's all. That's statistically all. But they have dominated the media. They've dominated the cultural shift. And they have infiltrated the major universities. It's just unbelievable what's being done. So a tiny, tiny minority makes a huge difference. So the majority is time. It wakes up.
It's time it's time the majority fucks off, really. Seriously, I mean, it's time for these giant groups of people to stop shitting on smaller groups.
Yeah. Well, but it's even funnier. He likes that statistic, which I don't think is right anyway. I think that's underselling.
I've always heard that it's closer to 10% of the population's gay.
I think it's closer to 10% are gay or bi. But last I heard that seemed pretty good was about 6% of men are gay, about 3% are bi, and about 3% of women are lesbians, and about 6% are bi. That's about 9%. But even if we go with the more conservative numbers of about 3% each, that's a minority. It's a pretty small minority. But the number he's missing out on is that the majority of Americans support gay rights.
Well, that too. But
so the majority isn't getting shit on here. The majority woke up and realized, oh yeah, there is no reason to be putting down this small little minority, because who they have sex with and who they live with and who they share their life with should really matter to them and the people they are having sex with and sharing their lives with.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, God. Get the fuck out of their bedrooms.
Yeah.
Serious.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, man.
So,
it... It pisses me off.
Just die, dude. Die.
Because it's like, okay, and there's actually a part of me who I still do understand it, as hard as it is. I still do understand the homophobia and the transphobia.
I see where he's coming from. It's still disgusting as fuck.
Well, it's fear of what you don't understand.
Yeah.
And once you understand it, you don't fear it anymore. The scariest part with it is all men are whores and all men want to have sex with everyone they want to have sex with. So therefore, every gay man must want to have sex with you. And because they're men, you're not going to know that they're hitting on you until it's too late.
Oh, no.
That's the fear. Well, let me tell you something. Once you finally have some gay friends and you hug a gay man and realize, oh, he's not trying to get into your pants, that's just a friend.
And
the fear goes away.
So what if he is? So what if he wants to get into your pants? You say no.
Right.
And then you go on about your fucking life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, if you, you know, kind of hard up, then, you know, let them buy you a couple of drinks. And then you say no. Enjoy that alcohol. I don't know. Just, this isn't rocket science. This is pretty easy to understand. If you don't want to have sexual intercourse with a person, you say no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And you go on about your business.
Yeah.
That's like all it takes.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's no reason to fear something that I got a feeling that nobody wants to have gay sex with Pat Robertson. I don't think his wife has wanted to have sex with him for like 60 years.
Okay. Realistically, if he can still get it up, that's a miracle. Or drugs.
That, yeah. If I'm thinking about Robertson's cock. Oh, God. Okay. No, we need to move on.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, moving on along. I'm still seeing it. Right-wing nutter pastor Rick Joyner was in heaven for 8 hours. And, you know, it wasn't just a song. It was 8 hours of bliss. Yeah, this is great. So back in 2014, our buddy Rick was sick, like super duper totes sick.
Okay.
He was so sick that he had what he thought was like Ebola plus the bird flu. And he was just utterly unable to get out of bed.
Wow.
Yeah. Ebola plus the bird flu. That's what he thought.
So
during that illness.
So like avian Ebola flu?
Yeah, like, you know, pig fucked a rhinoceros, fucked a bird kind of flu.
Probably with a side of SARS.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totes. Uh-huh. It was all in there.
He was probably afraid he was going to get a case of the gays.
So during this illness, though, he went to sleep one night and went straight to heaven. Those were his words, straight to heaven. Mm. So he goes on saying, I had an 8-hour earth time experience in heaven. I've had experiences where I was caught up to heaven a number of times, and every time I'm in a different place. And I'll tell you, heaven is so unbelievably diverse. There are more species in heaven than there are species upon the earth, spiritual species. You could get a taste of it as you read the scriptures and all the different beings and everything that are there. Angels are just one little group up in heaven. So, yeah, I mean, this sounds like some weird, I don't know, LSD trip or something, but, Rick goes on to say that, he actually got the key to eternal joy.
Wow.
That's how he was able to get into heaven was that key.
Okay.
And he says that you get that eternal key to joy, by bringing pleasure to the Lord. Yep. That's right. That's the key to eternal joy. Get on your knees in front of the Lord and beg and pray and suck.
No, he got a case of the gays for God.
Well, I added the suck part in there. Yeah. Yeah, that's how you do it. Bring pleasure to the Lord.
Yeah. Huh.
So, wow. Yeah, fever dream.
Uh-huh.
And he was so sick, so deathly sick with, you know, Ebola plus bird flu that he didn't even have to go to the doctor. But, you know, he felt better a couple days later. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was very, very sick, and I heard God talk to me. Yeah, that's how that works. Uh-huh.
You hear shit. Yeah.
Yeah. In my case, it was pneumonia plus poisonous spider bite with its own infection plus huge amounts of antibiotics. So, yeah, I was all kinds of fucked up. And, yeah, I can get how those weird delusions happen when you're sick. But, yeah, you don't take what happens when you're really sick seriously. Because if you do, you might come out the other end with $60,000 in student loans. Oh, excuse me, $50,000. It was $50,000.
Sorry, still a fairly large number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which will all be paid off in 6 years.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. I will finally have college and my time in the seminary paid off by the time my child starts kindergarten.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Man, good on you. So, let's move on from such a happy topic to Mormons. Tithe 10%, even if the kids are starving. Yeah. So, I'm going to butcher his name a little bit, but at the Mormon Biannual General Conference, Elder Valerie V. Cordon gave a speech demanding the church's money.
Oh, and he's of the 70.
Yeah. He's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not a big one, you're not speaking at the fucking General Conference.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. He says that even as a young child, you know, Valerie was forced to work at his father's factory when he was not in school. And he said, the first question my father always asked after I received my salary was, what are you going to do with your money? And the boy would say, pay my tithing and save for my mission. Yeah. you know, he used to be, you know, he was raised up during the Civil War in Guatemala quite a few years back. And that he was, you know, the country's definitely in turmoil and, you know, bad shit happens. He actually said that, you know, they used to go hungry and, you know, during these times, these difficult times, his parents would still tithe to the church. And, the question that the kid had, well, the kid at the time, had, you know, what are we going to eat? And, it's basically, you know what, tithe to the church and hopefully something good will happen to you. Kind of prosperity gospel feeling to me, but I know it's not technically.
Yeah, that's not. That is the, you know, if you give all money belongs to God. So if you give him your share, he will bless you.
Yeah. The more you give, the better you get.
And not even that. It's just that's where you start getting into the prosperity gospel. The more common version is basically, if you give what you're supposed to, God will never let you go without.
Well,
so if that's true, then you shouldn't be doing it even if the kids starve, because if the kids starve, then it didn't work.
So according to NBC News investigations, the Mormon Church is raking in about $7 billion a year from tithing, and no person can actually become a member of the Mormon Church without agreeing to pay that 10%. So they're not doing too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$7 billion actually seems a little small to me. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, the chief financial officer of the Mormon Corporation is not going to just like, here's our books.
Yeah,
this is
true. But actually, so no, maybe those numbers,
guessing them, they're going to go on the low side.
Maybe those numbers are accurate, because like the Adventist Church, at least, you know, 15 years ago, their the North American division got annual revenue of roughly $2 billion. And that was one of 13 divisions, the wealthiest division, but still one of 13. But the Adventist Church is quite a bit larger than the Mormon Church, but the Mormon Church is larger in the U.S., so would presumably have more wealthier members.
Hmm.
So, huh. 7 billion still seems low.
I'm pretty sure it's definitely low.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break, and then, more news.
If you like the show, consider giving us some financial support. To make it really easy with one-time donations, or to support us on a per-episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon, find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask. Please, think of the kittens.
Yeah, I need to do better about going to break, figuring out what to say. It was easier when we were doing something very different after each break, but yeah.
Well, you can always go for the standard TV show thing of we'll be back in 2 and 2.
Oh, from, yeah.
That was from like the match. No, the Newlywed Show, I believe, was one of them in the Dating Game.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, a new study looked at child influenza deaths between 2010 and 2014. 291 of the 358 deaths contained enough information to determine vaccination status, and they found that only 26% of those children had received the flu shot that year. According to the study, the flu shot reduces the risk of death by 65%, but only by 51% for high-risk kids, including those with asthma.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to go down on a limb here and say that I would rather take a vaccination and have a higher chance of being protected than not taking it and not being protected at all.
Yeah.
Am I missing something here? I mean, this doesn't seem very hard
to me. No. 2010 to 2014, if they were counting like flu seasons with that, so that would have been like August or September of 2010 through August or September of 2015, that would have been post swine flu, where I think that had 300 or 400 child deaths anyway. Yeah. And the only reason why they were specifically looking at child deaths with this is because there are so many adults who die from influenza every year that the CDC doesn't actually track the numbers. They only do estimates. But for children, there's few enough that they actually do really good tracking of it.
Hmm.
But when you look at the influenza shot, they are figuring out, based on statistical calculations, what are going to be the 3 to 5 most likely to hit strains next year. And then they develop that shot and they administer it. And in recent years, they have actually done a pretty poor job with that.
Oh, really?
Compared to past years. There have been surprise strains that have hit. They have gotten the calculations wrong and just screwed up with what strains it was going to be.
Shit happens.
There have been novel strains that have popped up mid-year, and there have been, and not every year's vaccination is going to be as good as other years. Just sometimes it's not going to be as strong. And so it's been not as good lately, but what they have found, generally speaking, is that even if the flu shot doesn't prevent you from getting the flu, it's going to make it easier on you. So it'll make it so that you're less likely to get deathly ill and reduce the risk of mortality.
In a few words, the flu shot reduces the risk of death by 65% in normal kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
51% for high-risk kids, including those ones with asthma.
Yep.
So take the shot, you're less likely to die. All right. There's no gray on this. I mean, unless you're like actually allergic to the ingredients in the shot, which is rare but possible, then why in the fuck wouldn't you do this?
Right. So to put it in other terms, if you had a way of reducing the risk of your child dying in the event of a car accident by 51%, you would do it.
That's only a flip of a coin, though, man. I mean,
you would still do it.
You would still do it.
If you had a way to reduce your child's risk of dying in the event of a car accident by 2/3, you would hand money hand over fist to do it.
So, yeah. Start saving up for a good baby seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. That's the kind of odds that we're talking about. And actually, car accidents are more common, but still. We're talking about those kinds of odds. It's not huge numbers of deaths, but if it's going to happen, you're going to do what you can to keep your kid from dying. And the inconvenience and discomfort of a shot is well worth it.
Let's make this a more fun way to think about it. If you're going to go to the horse track and bet on things, and there was a horse that had 64% chance of winning, you would probably fucking bet on that horse. If there was, you know, 10 horses out there and there was a horse that had 51% chance of winning, you would still bet on the fucking horse.
Yeah. Yep.
And probably win quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, probably not that much because the odds.
If the odds are that good, yeah, you wouldn't win much at all. You'd still get a little bit.
You'd still bet on that horse. Goodness.
Yeah. Well, sticking on vaccines and sick kids, Romania is currently in the middle of the worst measles outbreak in Europe in quite some time. And this is all thanks to their rapidly declining vaccination rate, now down to 86%.
Oh, shit.
So far, 2,000 kids have been infected and 17, all unvaccinated, have died.
Wow. Well, yeah, that herd immunity, they're way below that. Something like 94, 95%.
That's about what you need, yeah.
So, yeah, this is very understandable that it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And really fucking sad. Nobody should fucking get measles.
Right, yeah. We don't know how bad it is because we were all vaccinated. Our parents know how bad it is because they either had it and went through it or had friends who died or were blinded by it.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, there's no way to make a happy fuzzy story out of this. Just fucking get your kids vaccinated.
Vaccinations are perfectly safe.
Also, adults need boosters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Vaccinations are perfectly safe. They are awesome, and they are wonderful. Diseases are terrifying, scary, and dangerous. The prevention is not scarier than the disease. And the real clincher here is if everybody had gotten on board with getting their measles shots and kept up with that, we could stop doing measles shots. Because it's supposed to be the next one to get eradicated. But to do that, we need global herd immunity. Ah, fuck. All right, let's go ahead and end with a fun one.
Sure.
King Arthur Uther Pendragon.
I've heard that name somewhere.
Yeah, he was on The Nature of Existence. But, yeah.
I was going to say, you know,
the King Arthur part. But, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
and Uther Pendragon is King Arthur's father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's so. It's kind of a weird father son name.
Yeah. Well, the new King Arthur, Uther Pendragon, he was on The Nature of Existence. You can see him talk on that one. Roger Nygaard's film.
Oh, I like Roger.
Yeah, yeah. He and I had a little bit of a competition going over who would be on Chariots of Iron more. I won.
Good job.
Yeah, just barely, but yeah, we had some fun competition going on. It was nice. But he is a chieftain warrior druid and priest who regularly leads services for his fellow druids at Stonehenge, especially on the high holidays. And on one of these holidays, the summer solstice, the parking fee rises to £15 sterling instead of the usual £5. And this provocation by those goddamn English heretics, as he calls English Heritage, the foundation that manages the site, is a pay-to-pray policy and an infringement on his religious freedom. He is suing them.
Well, all right. Oh, boy. I mean, he might as well just put Jedi on his paperwork. I mean,
Did I forgot to mention he's also a sword bearer.
Oh, sure. Might as well be.
And he rides an iron horse.
Oh, no.
A Harley.
I'm afraid to ask.
It's a Harley.
I really need to see it. A Harley? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure Triumph is a British brand. Why isn't he?
It could
British?
Be a Triumph. Okay. I thought it was a Harley.
Kind of funny.
Yeah. He was in the Royal Army as a young man.
Mm.
And then when he got out, he joined a biker gang. And then he found Druidism.
Yeah.
And changed his name from John Timothy Rothwell to King Arthur Uther Pendragon.
Like you do. I was able to identify it. It's definitely a Moto Guzzi, which is out of Italy.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Actually pretty classy looking. Give him that. But it's still. Yeah.
So the thing is, when you've got a place like Stonehenge that is going to be most popular as a druid site on druid holidays, even for non-druid people, it's going to have high attendance on those days. And when you have higher attendance, you're going to have parking problems. And so it is very common to raise the parking fee to encourage people to take the bus.
Yeah. I mean, is Druidism actually a recognized religion in Britain? That's something to wonder
about. Yeah, that I don't know.
If it is, then he might have a slight case, I guess. Or maybe, you know, the city could just, you know, provide a shuttle bus. I don't know. I'm sure there's a little compromise somewhere in there. But at the end of the day, fuck off. You're a druid.
He's LARPing.
Oh, yes. God, yes. That is awesome.
He's LARPing at Stonehenge and pissed off about having to pay an extra £10 in parking once a year. He's not complaining about the £5 charge on normal days. Just the one day a year they charge a little extra.
Oh.
Fuck off, you wanker.
I want to call him a bell end.
Man.
Thanks, Marcia.
All right. Well, we have no feedback, or if we do, I missed it.
Oh, hey, I actually wanted to add in a couple of tiny little bits.
Oh,
also.
Okay.
Steve Bannon, you know, that nut job, who used to be on the National Security Council.
Yeah.
Isn't anymore.
Yay.
Yay. So that's a happy little bit of news. And second, and a little odd one, one of the decent report, well, big reporters, I'm not saying decent, one of the big reporters out of Breitbart News joins Russian propaganda news agency Sputnik.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Lee Stranahan is launching a radio show for Sputnik. And yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Wow.
So he's going right to his Russian paymasters.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome.
So anyways, just point it out a little bit. Anyways, yes, please go on.
And no new supporters. That's it for this week. And it's going to be a light edit so that I can get this out and go to bed.
Yes.
Until next week. Remember, not all those who wander are lost.
And Dustin's a daddy.
In 8 months.
In 8 months.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.
It hasn't even fully sunk in yet.
The way I've always understood it is that it doesn't really sink in until the little shit's like in your arms.
I think it will at the ultrasound.
Well, no matter how much it hits, just see, you know, I'll be curious about your thoughts about when your kiddo's born.
Yeah.
Like, bam, that hit me like bricks or something. I don't know.
Oh, it will.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. Yeah. Better you than me, sir. But, yeah, seriously. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
You guys been trying.
Yep.
So. Yay!
Scared the shit out of me. Fuck the cat. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Well, have fun.
Yeah.